Welcome to Pep Talk with Bridget Kay.
This hour is presented by Mainstay Financial and Anna Lee Leonard, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com. Or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
That's the truth.
Isn't it, though?
Ooh, baby. Good morning, Davis. How are you?
Mrs. Leonard, I am just doing so well. I feel like it's been a little while since you and I have spoken, and now I get to hang out in lieu of Bridget, and now you and I get to hang out along with Bob, and we're here ready to win.
We are ready to win, honey. Thank you so much. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Winning with Mainstay. I'm your host, Anna Lee Leonard, and with me today is Mr. Bob, my partner. Good morning, Mr. Bob.
Good morning, Anna Lee. Or should I say Ms. Leonard?
Oh, well, you know, I answered it either. When I used to teach, I'll never forget that. You'd walk in the classroom and you'd hear that sweet little sing song. Good morning, Miss Leonard. And I thrived on it. I really did. But, you know, well, I make Bob do that every morning, actually. You know.
Well, I've already told Davis he can switch to Anna Lee. That it's okay.
All right, well, I love it. It's Anna Lee and Bob, and of course I'm here to just push buttons.
And that's it. You're gonna push the buttons. So welcome so much to our show this morning. Want to remind you, if you have questions, you have comments, please, please call us or text us at 437-1620. We love to hear from you. We had a lot of response last week, and that made it so much fun, and would like to continue with that. So if you're out there, you're listening, question or comment, let us know. 437-1620. You can call, get on the radio, you can text, and Davis will tell me what the question is. Or you can call and just tell Davis, and he'll tell me if you don't want to be on the radio. So I wanted to do this week kind of what we did last week and start with some fun things and just kind of get you thinking. And I thought we would talk about tax law since, you know, the changes of 2020, our time to pay our taxes got pushed way, way back, leaves you an opportunity still to do some IRA contributions for 19, for 20. But, you know, the taxes are just a crazy, crazy thing. Would either of you two, Davis or Bob, like to just have a wild guess of how many words are in the federal tax code? How many words are in the federal tax code?
Oh, gosh. I would say, I mean, what a crazy guess. That's
I know.
That's like, what is the federal deficit in dollars? Let's see. I would say in the federal tax code, I'll say 200,000.
All right. So,
Bob, 200,000.
I'm going to go,
Davis,
a little,
what do you think?
I'm going to go a little higher. And okay. I'm not going to Bob Barker this and say like 200,001, but rather
Okay.
I'm going to go $500,000. $500,000.
Okay. Well, Davis, you win, but you're not even remotely close.
Ooh.
The federal tax code has approximately, are you guys ready for this? 3,800,000 words in it. Now, wait. That is 3 million words longer than the Bible.
Why?
I mean, wow.
Hello. Okay. And people still have this, I call it naive attitude that, oh, we're going to simplify the tax code. People, it is 3,800,000 words long. This is why we have the IRS. This is why we have accountants. This is why we have CPAs. This is why we have enrolled agents. This is the only thing that's going to ever happen is it's going to get worse. I mean, this is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. Okay.
Wow.
So you look at that, and you know, most of us own a Bible, and you know how thick that is. Now add about 3 million more words to it, and that's the size of the federal tax code.
Sure.
And that's why I tell people, don't try to interpret this on your own. Make sure you are dealing with a professional. Make sure you're a person that you're working with in the financial arena is talking to your tax person, they're talking to your attorney, because there's so much in there that one thing bounces off and affects something else. So I just thought that was an interesting fact to start with. And we'll go one more on the taxes. Are we ready for this?
Yes.
Al Capone. Everybody knows about Al Capone. You know, they called him Scarface, and he was quite a criminal. Do you know what he was put into jail for?
Wasn't it tax evasion?
That's correct.
You're right.
Yes.
They estimate he killed between 300 and 500 people. Now, that's a lot of people for one person to kill. He killed between 300 and 500 people. But in 1922, when they finally got him in jail, it wasn't for murder, because they didn't have sufficient evidence. They put him in jail for tax evasion. Hmm. So, you know, if they can get Al Capone, let me just put it to you this way. Don't mess up on your taxes, okay? That's a no-no. Do your taxes right, because eventually, somewhere along the line, people think they can twisted and evaded and all kind of, they're going to catch up with you.
Right.
They eventually will.
Exactly.
You know, too many people out there working for them. So I just thought that was a pretty interesting little thing to start with. So,
and of course,
anyway.
Only in our tax system is the burden of proof on the defendant rather than the plaintiff. So it's the only area of law that the burden of proof is on the defendant. So anyway,
yes,
very interesting.
Keep your receipts, do what you got to do. Go ahead. What is it?
Now we do have our first text message of the program. And if you do want to be a part of the program, 437-1620, our friend Rick says, I have received a life insurance check from the passing of my mother, and I need to split the money with my sister. What forms need to be used to give my sister her share without a tax implication?
The first thing we need to know is if his sister is also a named beneficiary, because if Rick is the only named beneficiary, we have actually gift or what we call wealth transfer tax consequences. But Annalee, let's assume that both are named as beneficiaries. Go ahead, Annalee.
Yes. Well, if both are named as beneficiaries, you don't have to worry about it. Your sister's share is tax-free, just as yours is, because the life policies, unless you have an extremely large estate, and like now we were talking about it yesterday, it's like $22 million that a couple can pass on, $11 million an individual can pass on. Before that, life policies could become taxable, and that's about the only time they could be. But if she was named a beneficiary, the insurance company should have sent her a check.
Right.
So if you got all the proceeds, that kind of begins to tell me she wasn't named a beneficiary, which is why I tell people, check your blessed beneficiaries. Don't depend on one person.
Right.
So the next thing we got to know is how much was the death benefit. So if it was $1 million death benefit, you're going to have a major problem in spreading this out. If it was $100,000, you're still going to have a problem. If it was $50,000, you're going to be able to take care of it in 2-3 years without any tax implication. Because what is it now, Bob? It's $14,000 can give to someone as a gift.
Yeah, is it 14 or 15? It's very limited.
But
I believe it's 14,000.
I think it's 14. So like, let's say if your sister is married, you could give her 14, give the husband 14. That's 28 you've transferred. But then you got to wait till the next year to do it again, because you're limited by year as to how much you can give.
And it is actually 15,000 in 2020.
It's 15 now.
It is.
Okay.
And I mean, that's a, you know, that's a Band-Aid. But
yeah,
you know, the way the question was worded, it was he needed to split it, like he was getting the money and that mm-hmm. he needed to split mm-hmm. it. So there may be some gift tax consequences. But yeah, we'd certainly need more information to answer that question, you know, to answer it completely.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to get back with your friend and find out more information, please feel free to either call us at the office or text back in during the show. We could go more in depth, but without knowing more, you know, this is, and I know you've encountered this, Bob, over the years of your career. People will come in, especially with things like IRAs, and they say, oh, I'm going to leave it all to the oldest one, and they'll split it up because they know what to do with it.
Exactly.
Don't do that.
Right. Right. Just, I mean, just the position you put the oldest child in, you know, and then the tax consequences. And then,
well,
And another thing, the, you know, the gift tax is assessed on the donor. The person making the gift is the person that is responsible for paying the tax, not the person receiving the gift. So,
right. So make sure that you know, do your beneficiaries. If you want equal shares, do equal shares. If you want one to get a little bit more, do that. But don't put the burden on one. You know, being a beneficiary is very different than being an executor of like the estate, where you've got the home and maybe an automobile, whatever. But being a beneficiary, that's why being beneficiaries is so unique. You set that up to go to each individual person, what you want them to have. It's a totally private event unless they talk to each other. So, you know, that can get to be pretty doggone tricky, and just don't put that burden on one person. It becomes very difficult. So I hope your friend figures this out. If not, please tell him to call us. That can be, confusing.
There are tax laws in place to prevent us from, not as much as in the past, but there are tax laws in place to prevent us from transferring wealth without some sort of tax consequence.
Yeah. So make sure, again, you use those, and your advisor should be telling you those things. If they're not, give us a call at our office, 437-3127. Set up a time. We'd love to sit and talk to you, because those are the things you have to think about. Now, last week we talked about Social Security, and we talked about Social Security for single people, individuals. So if anybody still has a question from last week, please go ahead and either call or text us about that. We had some really good questions in there. But we didn't have time to get to the idea of spousal benefits. Now, spousal benefits are really, really, it's a whole different ball game. And spousal benefits basically take place when you are legally married. In other words, you've gone before a priest, a minister, a judge, a rabbi, notaries can do weddings. But as long as it's a legal wedding and you are registered as being legally married, now it doesn't matter if you're an opposite sex couple, a same sex couple, as long as you are legally married, you come under the spousal benefits for Social Security. And people say, well, so why is that different? Well, because it can cost you a whole lot of money. And Bob and I spend a lot of time and a lot of mental energy and a lot of emotional energy trying to make people money and save people money.
Right.
So we get upset when people throw money away.
Right.
You know?
And you mentioned last week what we discussed on the radio show, and it was for single people. We actually had the program we had planned on talking about single people, spousal benefits, living spousal benefits, mm-hmm. surviving spouse benefits, and divorced spouse benefits. We only
right.
got through the single folks, and
right.
And I think we had 11 or 12 questions, so we're hoping to cover a little bit of the rest today, but we were actually caught off guard at how much interest there is in the topic of Social Security benefits.
Well, I think this is the biggest thing that everybody's learning about, is it's not just a throw the dart at the board and wherever it lands, that's when you collect your Social Security. Or your friend Joe next door all of a sudden says, yeah, you know, you need to go get your Social Security. Well, no,
right.
You gotta run your numbers. So let's talk about today. Let's talk about spousal benefits.
Right.
And again, this is for people who are legally married. Now, here's the thing you have to both remember. If you are legally married, you both want to make it a goal to collect the Social Security as far out as you possibly can. The earlier you start, the more money you're cheating yourself from getting, and the more money you're cheating yourself from perhaps your spouse getting, okay? So let's kind of go into how this works. Most couples, not all, but most couples, there is one of the two that we usually term the high earner. Now that used to be, like when my mom and dad were around and my grandparents were around, that was pretty much 99% of the time the man, because he was the one who went off and worked. The female stayed home and raised children. I know my mother never worked a day out of the house after she married my dad. And before that, the things that she did were not high earning positions. So all of her Social Security basically depended on what my dad made. Okay. Now, today's world, we've seen that very, very different. Bob and I have clients where both are physicians. They're making pretty much the same amount of money. We've got some couples where the female is making much more than the male.
Right.
And unless they change careers, that isn't going to change.
Right.
That's going to stay the same. So that's where running the numbers become important. Now let's remind Bob of a couple of things. So they look at history. How many years do they look at of the high wage earner?
They look at approximately 10 years to qualify, or what they call 40 credits. But that's the qualification.
Right.
In terms of number of years, it's 35.
35 years, yeah.
And that's a very long, solid history. But we don't want to advise folks that they don't qualify without 35. It's actually more like 10 years, but what are known as 40 quarters or 40 credits. But
right.
the term of art these days is 40 credits. And
right.
and most people have that. And, I think we used the example of we had somebody we met with that was 26, 27 years old and started having children, a young lady, and she wanted to be a homemaker, but she had her 40 quarters in because she went and took a job at 16 and worked a lot. Worked enough to amass 40 credits, and she was actually eligible.
And she was eligible. Mm-hmm. So eligibility and the determination of benefit are two different things.
Right.
So the determination of benefit, they look at the last 35 years of your employment, and they take the highest earning years. A lot of people think it's the last 5 years. No, it's the last 35 years of your employment that they use to calculate what you're going to receive as a Social Security benefit. Now, for most of us, the last 5 years have been the highest earning years. So that kind of determines just how much we're going to get. So here's the thing. All of us are eligible at age 62. Now, if you take at 62, you will get the lowest benefit possible. You will never be able to increase that unless you have a cost of living adjustment. You are stuck in that arena. So if a married couple, now, and I'm saying this judging on the ages that we're living to today, married couple makes the wrong choice, it can cost them between $250,000 and $400,000 of benefits in their lifetime. Now, I don't know about you, but I think of that as a lot of money.
Right.
I could do a lot of things with $250,000, $400,000. But people just walk away from it because we take Social Security so unbelievably lightly.
Right.
So they go back, they figure out what the benefits are. And this is why I tell you it's so important to run the numbers, okay? So most of us, what we call full retirement age, is at 66 for the younger people, it's 67. But for the majority of people right now, it's 66. Some are 66 in a few months. So I am of the opinion, unless you really just need the money, and some people really just need the money, okay? But unless you really just need the money, you should take it no sooner than your full retirement age, whatever that might be.
Correct.
Okay, so, and if you're working, for goodness sake, don't take it, especially under full retirement age, because you're gonna have to give some of it back. Mm-hmm. So let's say you got a married couple, Bob, and both wait and they apply at 67. And let's say that the higher wage earner gets $2,000. Mm-hmm. Now, they're both 67. They're both full retirement age. He gets $2,000. What does she get?
She would get half because she waited.
She'd get half. She waited. So she'd get $1,000. So they get $3,000 a month. That's pretty doggone good. Okay. So let's just take another scenario.
And we should say that that is without qualifying on her own. She is or let's say that the lower earning spouse, he or she,
right,
is qualifying by virtue of being married to the higher earning spouse.
You got it.
Or possibly the earning spouse. So there is no requirement of the 40 credits. There's the qualification is being married.
You got to be married, and you got to be married at least a year,
right,
to claim on someone's benefit. So you look at that and say, well, $3,000. Now let's take another scenario. Same thing. The higher wage earner is at $2,000 a month. He claims that, or she claims at age 67. The spouse decides to claim at 62.
Right. So,
you know how much the spouse gets now?
Quite a haircut.
$650 a month, and right at about 32-33% of what the spouse got. So instead of $3,000 a month, you're getting $2,650 a month. So do you see what I'm saying when I say that you cheat yourself? You just cheated yourself out of, what would it be across a year? $4,200 a year. That's $350 a month. That's a lot of money. I mean, that could pay your insurance. That could pay your taxes. That could do a lot of different things for you that you know, don't just say, oh, well, yeah, so I'm going to get $650 a month. No, you just cheated yourself out of a lot of money every single solitary month. Mm-hmm. Are we starting to see where this is going, where you really have to sit down and work numbers and do the numbers that are required? Are we getting close to news time?
It is about news time, Annalee.
I heard the music.
The music is
well,
on.
Well, hopefully Mark's going to tell me some good stuff.
Now, back to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Bridget Kay on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Hey, all we do is win, isn't that right, Annalee?
We're trying so hard, honey, to help people win, and making your decisions on your Social Security benefit is a great way to help you win and not just throwing the dart at the board. So that's what Bob and I are talking about today. So welcome back. If you got a question, comment, you want to text us, call us or text us at 437-1620. We would love to hear from you. Let's go back with a little another tax trivia before we start.
All right.
There is a tax that is called the sin tax. Not sin tax as in the one you find in the English grammar, but S-I-N, a sin tax. They're also called excise taxes. Do you guys know what those taxes are put on?
Cigarettes and
alcohol,
liquor, gambling.
Yep.
You know, just
gambling, alcohol,
questionable
tobacco.
Activities.
Yes. So there is a sin tax. I thought that was very amazing when I looked at that. Now here's another one. This is to me, it's hysterical. Alabama is the only state that has a tax if you buy a pack of playing cards. So if you buy a deck of cards in Alabama, you pay an extra 10 cents because that state has a playing card tax.
Wow.
I never heard of such a thing.
I wonder if that extends to dice and...
It just says playing cards, which I find amazing. You notice it's not Mississippi or Louisiana, but Alabama has a playing card tax. I just found that just like, wow, how did somebody come up with that? I mean, I don't know, kind of strange.
I've always thought it's interesting that they call it a sin tax, you know.
Yeah,
Well,
you know, those came about. You got to figure those things came about, you know, back in the 20s when we had prohibition and all
right.
Those things going on. So gambling was not legal. Alcohol was not legal. So, you know, if you were doing those things, you were probably considered a pretty bad person.
Right.
Now, of course, if we had that judgment today, 98% of us would be bad people. But, you know. I mean, what can I tell you? I think it's a gamble every day just to get up and get in your car and drive to work.
I agree.
Gosh, some of these idiots that passed me on the bridge, believe me, it's a gamble. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so let's go back. We were kind of talking about Social Security and when to claim as a couple. So we started with saying if the higher wage earner makes $2,000, applies at 67, the spouse applies at 67, he or she would get half of the higher wage earner, which would be $1,000. So they get combined $3,000 a month. Now, if they make the wrong decision and the higher wage earner gains at 67, but the spouse gains at 62, the spouse then only gets $650 a month. So they're literally just giving up. They're throwing away $350 a month, which is $4,200 a year. And let's suppose they live another 20 years, which is very probable. They've given up $84,000 of income, not counting cost of living. Okay. Now, this is where it really gets scary. Let's suppose the higher wage earner claims at 62, they get $1,400. That's all they get. The spouse waits till 67. So the spouse, instead of getting just half of that, actually gets their own, because they now have more credits. So they get $1,000. So they get $2,400. Now they're still $600 a month short from the first scenario of both waiting till 67. Now this is the mistake I find most people make. Let's say they both claim at 62. Mm-hmm. So 62, the higher wage earner only gets $1,400. 33% of that, the spouse only gets $650. They only get $2,050 a month.
Right.
They've given up almost $1,000 a month. That's $12,000 a year. Let's go back and say they live 20 years. That's $240,000 that you have just thrown away. See, right. When people say, oh, it's not that much money. Yes, it is.
That's right. My gosh,
yes, it is. So let's go to what I consider the optimum. The higher wage earner claims at 70. They get $2,480. The spouse comes in at 67, so they're now full retirement age. They get $1,000. Why do they only get $1,000? Why don't they get half of $2,480? Because you get half of what the other would have gotten at full retirement age. Okay,
and
remember, full retirement age was 2000.
Right, and we should point out that there is no reason for the lower earning spouse to wait past full retirement age.
Not if they're going to collect spousal benefit. That's the time to go ahead and claim it. So then, well, now I'm getting $3,480 a month, but Bob, Why wouldn't I just let the higher earning spouse claim at 67, and then we would have had $3,000 a month? Well, besides the fact I gained $480 a month, what happens if the higher earning spouse passes away?
If the higher earning spouse passes away, the lower earning spouse can step into those shoes, and that makes it very nice. That is the essence of why you wait until age 70. If you can, for the higher earning spouse.
Exactly. So the higher earning spouse passes away. They're getting $2,480. The spouse was getting $1,000. Now the spouse gets $2,480 a month, not $3,480. You don't get both. You kind of step into the shoes of the person who passed away. So the thing is, if you don't need it, don't take it. Because as long as you're working, what are you doing? You're contributing more to Social Security. You're making your benefit go up. And between full retirement age and 70, it goes up at 8% a year. That's an unbelievable rate.
Right. And you made that great point last week. The actual calculation is, for every year prior to full retirement age, what we call FRA, retirement age, the percentage decrease is 8.33% for every year.
Yeah.
Plus, for every year you take it that is 3 years or more early. So if you do take it at 62, there's an extra 5%. So up to somewhere around 13, a little over 13% is... is the haircut we talk about that you take. So it's easy to do the math. Now, there are a few occasions where you may want to consider taking it, and these are rare. But if you number one, if you are working, you can't even consider taking it early. And we're talking at age 62 or 63 or any time before FRA, before, or before you stop working. But the other two things that really happen that may change your mind are other extenuating circumstances, like you just have to have the money to live on. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody is terminally ill, you may choose to take it at 62. But those are very unusual, but they do happen.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I said for everybody, things are different. So don't make that decision on your own. Consult with your advisor, and your advisor should have all types of programs where they can show you your break-even point. They should be able to show you your optimum of collecting when you should collect, and they should be able to show you what happens to the spouse if you were to pass away.
Right.
So all of that is so important, and that's why when we do planning for a client, Bob, when we run their numbers and do a plan and do a projection, Social Security is a very important part of that plan. We show you. You know, if you take it here, if you take it there, where are you going to come out better?
Right.
How can you make a decision without that?
Right. It's huge. And it's not like you're running one or two scenarios. We have clients where we run five or six. It all depends. And there's so many variables out there. But I do like the idea of starting that planning in your early 60s, and certainly taking a look at it anytime in life. Go on to ssa.gov. They'll ask you a few questions. It's a great exercise. You'll get your entire employment history year by year, how much you made, how much you reported in Social Security income, and it'll tell you your eligibility. It'll give you the pro formas at age 62. Full retirement age for most, 67, and beyond full retirement age, or not full retirement age, but the last point in time you can take it is age 70. But, Annalee, I think you pointed this out. You don't have to apply for Social Security.
No.
You do not.
You don't.
And Joan points this out a lot. You do not have to apply for it. And some people feel that they don't need to, but hey, we are.
Yeah. I mean, there are some very wealthy people that never take it. Mm-hmm. They don't need it. They'd rather leave that money in that pot for others to use. But the majority of us do take it. It is ours. We did put that money in there. It was set aside for that. So don't ever hesitate to take it. But again, you know, don't take it just to take it. Let's go back to that thing between full retirement age and 70. The benefits go up by 8% a year. And people say, well, I'm going to take this money out and put it in the bank. Okay, you're earning 1%. Where are you getting ahead? The math doesn't go together.
Right.
Okay. So don't think that or say, oh, I'm going to go put it in the market. If it's a market like the market we've been in for the last year, good luck. So, you know, you've got to look at all the sides. Now, we're going to have time, Bob. Let's go into what happens for people who are divorced.
Right.
Now, here's the biggie. You must have been married for 10 years. Not 9 years and 10 months, not 9 years and 11 months. You must be married for 10 years, okay? I tell the story often, and this is a true story about a lady who came into my office and was, just grumbling and, using some not so nice words about the person she was married to and how she was going to divorce him and walk out on him and yada, yada, yada. And I just let her vent. And as she calmed down, I said to her, I said, how long have you been married? And she said, we've been married 9 years and 10 months. I said, all right, here's what's going to happen. I don't care if you go lock yourself up in a one room in that house If you go to the Bahamas for 2 months, you can come live in my extra bedroom for 2 months, but you will not divorce him until that 10th anniversary is hit. He was a person who made a lot of money. She would have been walking away from a tremendous amount of Social Security. Because again, she was one of the people that when they got married, because he had a very high pay job, she didn't work.
Right.
So she basically had nothing to go back to on her own. And he was going to be one of those that at 70 was going to get over $3,000 a month.
Right.
So she was walking away from $1,500 a month. I mean, that could make a pretty big difference, couldn't it?
That's a tremendous difference for a couple of months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So married 10 years, you cannot be remarried. Okay. And again, you must be a minimum of 62. But of course, if you start at 62, guess what? The benefits are reduced. Okay. This is something that people don't know a lot about, and you have to. Now, they've changed the laws on this. Used to be, before they started with all the laws, that was back in 16, wasn't it, Bob? They changed all these laws.
Right.
Used to be you could go in and just claim your spousal benefit and allow yours to grow if yours was going to be more. Well, you can't do that anymore if you go in and apply. If your benefit is more than half of what you would get as a spousal divorcee, guess what happens? They make you take your own.
Right.
Because it's the higher benefit.
It's interesting that the person you're claiming the benefits from, the Social Security, mm-hmm. you can be divorced from them, and the marriage can have lasted for over 10 years. You can remarry, get divorced, mm-hmm. or remarry again, get divorced. It doesn't matter what happens in between, but at the time you claim, you have to be single.
That's correct. And if you've married more than one person, you pick the one that has the higher Social Security.
Right.
That's just the way it works.
That's
okay.
Right.
And this is part of what has happened to the system. And that's why they made these laws more stringent, because let's think about it. I mean, we all know people who have been married a couple of times and they're married now. So that's three marriages. Now, let's say they are the high wage earner. They start collecting and their present spouse collects and the two people they divorce collect. That's four people collecting on one person's Social Security.
Right.
And it doesn't affect what the primary owner is getting by one penny.
Right.
It doesn't affect their benefit at all.
That's a great point to make. There is double counting in this.
Yeah.
And it does not affect the Social Security wage earner that mm-hmm. you're going to kind of piggybacking off of. And, you know, if they were married three times for over 10 years each, all three, and it does not it doesn't put a dent in what that person takes in Social Security benefits when they choose to.
So let's just kind of look at that. So let's say that the high wage earner is $3,000. Each person who applies is eligible, let's say, for half, which is $1,500. So now that is $4,500 plus the person themselves. That's $7,500 a month being paid out of one person's Social Security benefit.
Right.
And that's unbelievable.
Right, it is unbelievable. And we mentioned double counting. That would be triple counting right there. And
I'd
say it's unusual, but it does happen. It does happen.
It does happen. Mm-hmm. It does. And that's part of why they changed the rules, because what was happening was a lot of divorcees would go in, claim spousal, let their own benefit continue to grow till 70 because they'd get more money, and then they'd switch over to their own. So you can see how this was starting to drain the system. I'm not saying fair, unfair, but originally those two laws were never supposed to have been put together. They were two separate laws that got meshed together. And then when they did all the reforms, they found that and said, whoa, wait a minute. This has gotten way out of hand. We got to go back to what this originally was set up to be. So it's if you're divorced, make sure you know the rules. If you go in to apply as a divorcee, you have to have a copy of the marriage certificate, a copy of the divorce certificate, and of course, proof of who you are and the Social Security number of the person that you're going to claim benefits from. Now, they never get in touch with that person. They don't tell that person anything. It's a very private affair. But, you know, it's something that you just have to think about, because once you start collecting now, you can't, like we used to be able to do one thing and then go back and switch to the other, to something else. We can't do that anymore. You know, so you got to be careful of making your choices and what choices you make. And if you've had more than one husband or wife, pick the one that has the most money.
That's right.
That's all I can tell you.
That's right.
So, you know, it's not an easy formula. Just what was it last month, Bob? Month before, we spent with our office, we had four of us, in a four-day training that was 3 hours a day,
right,
on nothing but Social Security and Medicare. Because the laws are convoluted.
There's so much information out there, and all the more reason to meet with a professional, schedule some time. And you know, I would say, and Annalee, you weigh in on this. What do you think? Age 60 is about the time you need to start really planning for this. I mean, you want to know what you're getting. You're getting that information. We mentioned going to the SSA.gov site, mm-hmm, and finding out. Now, you're in your 30s, your 40s, Davis over here. Gosh, go to SSA.gov and see what you've paid in, and then it'll give you the pro formas if you continue working and at age 60. But these folks, you know, they just can't even think about, you know, 62, 66, 70.
Oh, no, but that's ancient. When
creeps
you're
up
their
on
age.
You. It creeps up on you. We keep talking about FRA, full retirement age. And, you know, just, you know, for our listeners, if you were born between the years of 1943 and 1954, full retirement age is 66. If you were born after 1960, mm-hmm, it's 67. Anytime mm-hmm between 1954 and 1960 date of birth, it's 66 and change, you know, 2 months, four months, up to 10
right
months. But, you know, for a lot of us, myself included, it's 67, and that's probably going up again.
Oh, it will. It will. I mean, I would think for people like, you know, Davis and all the younger people that are there, their full retirement age is probably going to be 68, 69. I think we're going to get to a stage where they're going to force everybody to wait till 70. You're going to see some of these other choices fading out, and that's going to be part of the choices to maintain the system. Changes we've already talked about that they made in the system literally saved billions of dollars of Social Security benefit. And, you know, people complain, but this is what's going to make sure that there's a bucket of money there for us all to get a fair share of what we put in.
Right.
And it's a great benefit. We've put into it originally. It was put there simply for widows and orphans. And then it became a supplement to our income in retirement. So let's use it. Let's not abuse it. And make sure you make the correct choices. You have just, I can't emphasize enough, you have to run the numbers to see where you come out the best. It's like people don't just go to a bank and say, you know, I want to borrow money. Plan. Go out, say please, say thank you, and you will indeed make it a wonderful world. Take care of yourself. Stay safe. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.